I do not understand. Why is this spot not doable for pickup?
I am good to go. I say again, I am good to go now.
Burnett! 06. You are a combat naval aviator. Start acting like one.
You've been shot down. Life is tough. I am very sorry.
You pull yourself together. You do whatever it takes. Create some angles between you and your pursuers. Use your training, use your head. Evade and survive, and we will bring you home. Do you understand? We will bring you home.
Welcome to Syndicate, a film and TV podcast. From our screens to your watch list, we gather to share and discuss your next favorite. Join us as we want you to spend less time scrolling and more time watching. And now, here's your host, Armand Haddad.
Hello, and welcome to Syndicate, where we want you to spend less time scrolling and more time watching. I'm your host, Armand Haddad, and welcome to Episode 5. This season, we are exploring the hidden gems of films, or films you probably passed over watching. Joining me in the studio today is Josh. Josh, how are you doing today?
Doing fantastic.
Awesome. Me too. And I'm really excited to talk about the movie for today. Currently, Josh is a business analyst for a technology company here in the Chicago area. Today, we are going to deep dive and discuss the ramifications of war and touch on the plight of the people of former Yugoslavia. For today's film, recommendation is Behind Enemy Lines. Josh, what did you think about Behind Enemy Lines?
Well, I think it's an interesting movie. Definitely not one of my favorites. To say I enjoyed it would be an exaggeration, frankly. Not to be critical or get into the details, this obviously isn't me reviewing the movie, but off the top of my head, the only thing I could think of during the movie's low points, which there were a few that I can think of very easily, I couldn't help but stray towards better movies about conflict, better movies about warfare, better movies about war as hell. Behind Enemy Lines, it feels like it's trying to drag you through the war as hell idea instead of kind of taking you through it coincidentally. And in my experience, movies I've seen where I'm really immersed in like the story, really immersed in the context of what's going on, war as hell is serendipity. It's not, here we are, we took you to war as hell. Isn't war hell? It's, oh God, all these things are happening. People are trying to live their lives and war is happening around them. It's come to them, or they've come to it. Right. And they haven't realized just how bad it is until they're here. Think Full Metal Jacket, for example. Like Full Metal Jacket is war as hell, but you're not greeted with war as hell. Instead, the character is brought to it and he only realizes war as hell after the movie gets going, after momentum gets moving. War as hell is the background. It's the context. So that's just to open up my first thoughts about Behind Enemy Lines. Like that kind of like plagued the entire experience, unfortunately. Just the kind of like, I feel like I could be watching something else.
Right. So you're saying that Behind Enemy Lines, from like a filmmaking standpoint, focuses more on the backdrop and not the characters, and like better films such as Full Metal Jacket focuses on the character, and then coincidentally, the background is the war.
I think that's a fair way to put it. Behind Enemy Lines feels like the director didn't quite know how to find that balance between, I want to tell a character story, but I also want to show how war is hell.
Right.
It's as if throughout the movie, there was this kind of stumble between both. Like, oh, we're talking about the travesties and in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Yes.
And then we're stumbling over on how Owen Wilson needs to learn his lesson. It's just like, well, what are we doing here? Like, are we developing character, or are we talking about war as hell? Okay, I guess we're doing, oh, went no. And it's just like every time you tried getting a sense of footing of what the movie was trying to go, it jumped to the next thing. So it was, it felt like an odd child between a Bruce Willis action movie and a Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
That's kind of it. It couldn't decide whether it wanted to be a lock, stock, and guns blazing war movie or a gritty, realistic tale of war as hell. It really could not decide that. That's what it felt like.
I mean, yeah, I could totally, because while I was watching it, there's so many sequences where it's like, this is exciting, all these action set pieces.
Absolutely.
But the actual story is kind of set to the side. I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it is an action movie.
I think that's the problem, though, is that you watch, if you want to watch an action movie, you watch Die Hard. Mm-hmm. If you want to watch a story movie that's set in war, you watch Full Metal Jacket, Saving Private Ryan, Platoon. There's a variety of really good war movies. You want a war movie that's really, really philosophical, you can watch Apocalypse Now. There's just a lot of movies out there that focus on the theme of warfare so much better. This one just felt like it could not decide. Mm. And that really rubbed me the wrong way in terms of like everything, because it did have some really cool special effects. And I will say, yeah, that was probably my favorite parts of the movie, was when it showed off some really great practical special effects. Mm-hmm. Top of mind's favorite scene would probably be the ejection scene towards the beginning,
right,
when they're flying over the no fly zone. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're being chased by the missiles. It wasn't the, you know, the choppy CGI missiles from the early 2000s that was exciting. What was exciting was the ejection and the quick shots of the internal parts of the jet coming apart and burning up and all this stuff like that. Like, whoa, they put a lot of effort into this. This is really, really neat.
Oh, yeah. And before we really get into the movie, a thing we like to do at Syndicate is the 60-second elevator pitch.
Please stand clear of the closing call.
So I've been there, you've been there, recommending a movie to a friend, and they ask you, well, what's the movie about? So I'm going to give you 60 seconds to pretty much summarize the movie without major spoilers of Behind Enemy Lines. And go.
Owen Wilson is a ace fighter pilot outside the neutral zone of war-torn Bosnia and Herzegovina during a peak of a bloody conflict. Told to stay off, this cut-loose fighter pilot just is thirsty for action, but isn't really getting what he wants. But and that's until he breaks the rules, and it will cost him everything, including a hard lesson.
Wow. Under 30 seconds.
Oh, geez. I'm just terrible at keeping track of time. That summarizes it essentially, what the movie's about.
I mean, it's a very simplistic movie. Like, the plot isn't very deep. Like,
I was wanting for more. That's really what it comes down to.
Right. You know, the ironic thing is that the whole Bosnian conflict and the breakup of Yugoslavia is such a complicated issue.
That's the thing that culturally got me as well, that allowed me more as well. I'm like, there are not enough movies or shows or historical focuses on the breakup of Yugoslavia, mm-hmm. on that whole messy conflict in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And the fact this movie focused on it, I think, is both humorous and sad, because when you get a movie that had enough of a budget to get Gene Hackman and Owen Wilson in the same screen, mm-hmm. yet they made it a kind of drunken stumble between an action movie and a war thriller.
And they actually filmed the movie in Slovakia.
They did. I read that on the Wikipedia article. They got the budget to film on site, on location.
Like, there's a lot of places where they're filming where they're concerned about, you know, toxicity of the land from the war. And for those that don't know about the whole Yugoslavian conflict in the 90s, to put it very, very simply, Yugoslavia was a socialist state, and the breakup occurred after the death of the first president, Tito, in 1980. And this led to an economic collapse, racial tensions between the Serbs, the Bosnians.
The Bosniaks. There were Bosnians and Bosniaks, and the Bosniaks were Muslims.
Jeez.
Like, it was a mess. There were like three or four different groups that all had different agendas. It was a massive civil war.
Yeah. And it broke into six nation states of Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Slovenia, Montenegro, Macedonia. Yeah, like, it was rough.
And I'm a huge history buff, so, you know, I tip my hat at some of the dialogue that pointed out the complexity of the conflict. Mm-hmm. Like the NATO commander who was saying, we've been here for 5 years.
Yeah.
Can you tell the difference? Can your man tell the difference between a Bosnian, a Croatian, and a Bosniak uniform? Because I've been here 5 years and I can't. And it's like, that was one of the many complexities of that conflict, was it was a massive civil war that NATO forces basically stepped their boot right into trying to calm things down.
Yep.
And they failed. And they had to pull out peacefully and kind of just look the other way. And that's around the time that those atrocities started happening, mm-hmm. was as soon as NATO forces started stepping away.
Yeah, like a big theme of the movie, even though like it is kind of like a shoot 'em up action movie, like it's still conveyed.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's still conveyed because so the main character, Owen Wilson, who plays Chris Burnett, aka
yeah, Burnett, that was it. Yeah,
Chris Burnett.
That's how engaged I was in the actual story. Was I forgot his name. The only name I remembered 100% was his co-pilot Stackhouse.
Yeah,
just because the name is memorable.
Stackhouse. And his call sign was Longhorn.
Oh God! It's just make a Top Gun movie, for God's sakes. Like, don't even shy away. It felt like a Top Gun clone.
Yeah,
as part of it. Like,
I was getting those vibes.
Yeah,
like I felt like I was like, okay, this is like my generation's Top Gun, because like we were born after Top Gun. Like that was the '80s, and this was like 2001. So we were kids when this movie came out. So this was like, oh, our Top Gun.
What's interesting is I wonder how they would have produced this movie differently if it was post 9/11 produced. I looked at the date right. specifically of when it came out, and it came uh-huh. out November of 2001. Mm-hmm. So that means, given the average production life cycle of a movie, that they were probably producing it in 1999, yep. 2000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 9/11 had happened by the time they released it and all the filming was done.
Right.
So it leads me to wonder, like, what would have been different about this movie, about a historical period, mm-hmm. had it been filmed or produced in a post 9/11 America?
Yeah.
You know, could they have gone over to Yugoslavia? Would there have been a lot of tension about making a war movie, about making a war movie about a soldier getting shot down right. in enemy territory and almost killed by essentially what would some uncomfortable parallels could be drawn, mm-hmm. to say the least.
Yeah. And let's get into it. So this movie, like you said, it was probably filmed in 1999, and then it was released in November of 2001. So mere months after the terrorist attacks in yep. New York.
Yep, yep.
So I felt this movie, it was kind of like a linchpin in like what movies were like right before
9/11. Yeah.
Because right after 9/11, the enemy of the nation, like the subconscious, like enemy, like switched from like Eastern Europeans,
former Soviet Union,
to Muslim Islamic terrorists.
Right, right. The age of terrorism. Mm-hmm. The age of terrorism became a big cultural focus. And you're right about that. Now that I think about it, like, I hate to reference it so much, but you think Die Hard and the criminals in Die Hard that hijack the tower, they're Eastern Europeans.
Yep. Hans Gruber.
Yeah, they're former Soviet citizens probably, or some. I don't know enough about Die Hard, but I know they're Eastern Europeans.
Right.
And they're mercenaries, and they're yeah. there to make money, and they're there to rob and kidnap and simplistic two-dimensional bad guy stuff.
Yeah. And you know, like, side note about Die Hard, even after, you know, 2001, they still stuck to their guns about going after Eastern Europeans and Russians, especially in, I think it was Live Free and Die Hard. Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia.
Fun fact, uh-huh. when I was looking at the Wikipedia article for the director, he actually he made that movie as well.
Really?
For real. I am not, I wish I was joking. he made Live Free, Die Hard, 2013. Uh-huh. And he also made the Flight of the Phoenix remix. Not right. remix, the remix. Damn, that Flight of the Phoenix remix, though. Yeah, no, he made the remake of yeah. the Flight of the Phoenix, which I thought was an okay movie.
That's pretty good.
It was okay.
It was all right.
It was okay.
So, yeah. So the director, John Moore.
Irish.
Irish man.
He's Irish, yeah.
So he...
Learned a lot from Wikipedia.
What?
Learn a lot from Wikipedia.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have like a lucrative career outside of Die Hard and the Flight of the Phoenix remake.
His career was very lackluster.
Uh-huh.
I referencing Wikipedia, he had a very, very like the amount of movies he's made is like 5 or 6
right
over the course of like 20 some years. Like, man.
And you would think after a movie like star-studded with Owen Wilson and Gene Hackman, Owen Wilson, you know, what's funny about Owen Wilson is that
aside from his, wow.
Wow. He didn't even say wow in this movie.
He did a couple times.
Really?
Maybe he just like mixed it in with his like temper tantrum in the beginning. Like, why are we doing here? we're eating Jell-O. Anyways.
So Owen Wilson, so he's known for being, you know, pretty much best friends with Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Like, he's in almost every Wes Anderson film. And in 2001, he was in 2 other movies besides Behind Enemy Lines. He was in Zoolander, and he was in The Royal Tenenbaums. So, The Royal Tenenbaums, Zoolander, and then Behind Enemy Lines. 3 totally different movies.
What a portfolio.
That man has range.
Yeah, he has wow or wow.
So, this was Owen Wilson's first action movie, and even...
Was it really?
It was, yeah. He felt weird taking on the role, but he wanted to take on the role. And I do appreciate his portrayal of the main character, because he could have been like Bruce Willis, like a meathead, like, yeah, let's do it. But that's not him. Like, he doesn't have the stature for it, and he doesn't have the personality for it. So he played it as the everyman, and I think that was a smart choice.
Yeah. I will say, one of the interesting things I read about this movie, they got sued over this movie and the eventual sequels they created.
Really?
Yeah. They got sued by the guy who lived this.
Yes.
Actually, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You probably have his name written down.
So the film is loosely based on Scott O'Grady.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
He was captain of the Navy. So he was shot down over Bosnia and evaded the Bosnian Serbs for over a week behind enemy lines before being rescued.
And I think this is a good segue into another theme of the movie. Can we move to that?
Yeah, of course.
This is a good segue into a theme that was one of the themes that I was like, oh man, this would have been a great movie if it had decided to be a movie that had that backdrop of war as hell. Mm-hmm. If it decided to be a movie that was about gritty survivalism and about being out there by yourself and stranded and stuck and trying your best. In my mind, that is like one of the saving graces of this movie, is those choice scenes where he's trying to survive, where he's crawling through the mud, where he's like going from tree to tree and he's trying to like hide and survive essentially. Like, I wanted more of that. That to me, movies that have done that are like their choice because they show the human condition. They show acting, they show like human struggle, and they make you really feel for the character, and they create a level of tension that when it's pulled off is just so, so good.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the scenes, and again, this was me internally like thinking, I could be watching a different movie right now. But even during those scenes, I felt that, because I could think of, why wasn't the rest of the movie like this? When he's crawling through the mud and breathing hard, looking around, and the camera's like jumping everywhere as the guys in the background are like following him, the Croatian or Serbian militia.
Uh-huh.
I thought of Dunkirk.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah.
The entire movie at Dunkirk's a survival movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the main characters are trying to do. They're trying to survive.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like. If there was more of that, that would have saved this movie, like, in my mind, 100%.
Yeah. And I agree with you. That's those scenes. So in the movie, Owen Wilson veers off course after a routine patrol, and he gets shot down by a land-to-air missile. And he miraculously survives. And then after he survives, he has to survive in Bosnia, war-torn Bosnia.
Yeah.
So I think if there was more scenes of that act, where he's like trying to live and outrun both the militia and, you know, to get back home, like, that would be amazing. And that's why
a survival movie.
That's why I included in this season is because of those scenes. Like, the rest of the movie is kind of like, it's okay, but like the scenes where he's like evading the Niko Bellic from GTA 4.
I was just thinking about that. I'm like, all right, well, you got the you know, representative of Adidas here following you around, gonna snipe you. And he's just like, I immediately thought, like, I couldn't help but laugh when, you know, Owen Wilson, like, swapped his body with somebody else's.
Really?
Which I thought was really, like, lame, but that's not really fair. But later on in the movie, when that happens and he, like, checks, he's like, oh, he's got the same tattoo as me. When he pulled it back, I immediately thought, like, you were gonna see the Adidas logo stamped on his.
You see that? That is a Nike logo.
That is.
I have Adidas, three stripes.
We're from separate prisons.
So yeah, I wish there was more scenes like that. Yeah,
more survival.
Like that, really, because I watched this around the time when it came out, so I was like young. And
movies like this are always way better when you're young.
Oh yeah, like revisiting this, I'm like,
better memories of them.
Because I had such fond memories of watching this when I was a kid. I was like, whoa, this is like gritty war movie. It's like one of my first war movies.
Yeah.
And then looking back at it now, it's like,
oh
yeah, it's not terrible, but it's not the best. It's just kind of,
I have a movie that I think of every time I have that experience.
What?
The experience of, like, here's a movie I saw when I was, you know, really young. And I remember being really cool and great, and I really enjoyed it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then when I watch it as an adult, I'm just like, you know, a balloon deflating slowly as I watch it. Cause I'm like, oh, this isn't that good. The movie I think of every time is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Because when I watched it as a kid, I was like, this is awesome. This is great. Wow. You know, really good quality, really great special effects. And oh, it's really interesting. But now I watch it as an adult and I'm like, this is bad. This is really bad. Oh no, this is bad. Like, how'd you get Sean Connery and you just botched the entire movie? Like, there's so many things wrong with that movie, but that's what I think of. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Behind Enemy Lines was just another League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, at least to me, because I think I remember watching it like way back as well, like seeing clips of it. I didn't watch the entire movie, but.
Yeah, I think it would have been better if Sean Connery was in the movie. He was like, oh,
yes. Yes, he's the NATO commander. But then Gene Hackman wouldn't have been able to do what he did. Sean Connery would have just intimidated him too much.
Listen, you can't do that. I'll show you. But,
all right.
Anyways, Chris Burnett, yep. his character, was very interesting to me because he embodied a very specific soldier and a very specific soldier of the time pre 9/11, which was he was just patrolling, keeping the peace, like
a peacekeeper, not part of the international, like, mandate of NATO and UN to, like,
yeah,
try and prevent things like Rwanda from happening.
Yeah.
Essentially,
pretty much someone that's not in an active war.
Yep.
And what he said in the beginning of the movie in the first act was, that really stood out to me, was everyone thinks they're going to punch a Nazi in Normandy.
Yeah. 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 That was actually a pretty good, that was a pretty good focus on the time the bravado people had.
It's like when you join the military, it's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, fight tyranny and do all these things. And then actually,
they sell it that way to you.
Yeah. And I think that was because of post 9/11, they probably recut it to be like, yeah, America, we have, you know, the most powerful army. No one can stop us. Join now, enlist.
It's like you can fly cool jets and do other cool stuff. It's
right.
Like, okay.
And those days are over. Like, there's no more Nazis. There's no, like, evil empire. Evil,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just like these proxy wars all around the world that we're just kind of like managing and making sure they're not, like, getting out of hand.
I mean, if you want to talk about, like, militaristically, like, my historical brain, my love of history cringed quite a few times, but what I know of the military from my military family, not from my own experience, of course, you know, I was never in, never served, But from my military family, going back years, there were so many things that were just wrong. So many things that were just like, no, there's no way this would have happened. He would have gotten court-martialed. He would have gotten court-martialed. He would have been suspended. He would have been put in the brig. They would have had a helicopter come pick him up and, okay, cool, you don't want to be out here? Get out then. You're a danger to everyone around you because you're reckless. I mean...
Wow.
Wow, court-martial. Anyways, I mean, that alone, like, there's a lot of things I could ignore, but I just couldn't ignore that at the end of the movie, they're like, yeah, and then Beckett was his name? The one Owen Wilson played?
Chris Burnett.
Burnett Beckett, jeez.
Bennett like Beckett.
Maybe thinking of, you know, Burnett. You know, at the end, they give, like, this like, as though it's based on a true story. This whole story of like, oh, and then Burnett stayed in the military after all and everything was fine. I'm like, in the real world, no, he would not. He would have been court-martialed the moment he got back on that ship. He would have been dragged away in cuffs. You destroyed a piece of military hardware. You directly disobeyed an order. Uh-huh. You got one of your fellow soldiers killed for no reason. You endangered the lives of the entire vessel, essentially, because we had to send people out to save you, and we had to compromise. Like all the things the NATO commander was telling Gene Hackman was true. By us doing this, we are threatening the situation. We are possibly opening up a massive war, inflaming a civil war into something that would be a massive conflict that would infect the rest of the region. Like, so many things are wrong with that I was just like, internal screeching.
But Josh, you don't understand. We have to get our boy back.
That was so dumb. So dumb. I just could not suspend my belief. Like, you know, when you think of movies like this, someone always chimes in and says, oh, just suspend your belief. No, the movie has to decide whether it's going to be Die Hard or whether it's going to be a gritty war film. It can't be both, especially when it completely says, like, oh, no, we're just going to completely disregard that in the real world or anything remotely close to it, this guy would have been abandoned. It's crappy to say, but you put yourself in a bad situation. The military is not going to expend every single ounce of energy to save you, especially if you're in a situation where you being there at all could inflame an international crisis. Like, it's just, it's fiction.
Oof, wow.
I know this from stories I've heard and stories my father would tell and my grandfather would tell, and just the kind of idea of, like, if you're stuck behind enemy lines by your own making, it's your responsibility to get out there. Unless you are carrying the president of the United States or a general of the army, there's no reason they're going to send an entire, like, brigade or an entire helicopter or an entire ship out to save one person. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and that's why in the real life event of Scott O'Grady, he was out there for a week.
Exactly.
And he had to get to the rendezvous point. They're like, you need to get here.
Far out.
We can't pick you up. We can't, like, bust in.
He had to go to a neutral zone.
Yeah.
I can greet a neutral zone where it wouldn't seem that suspicious for them to come in and pick him up.
Mm-hmm. Just imagine that.
Yeah, he had to go. I read a little bit of O'Grady's story and connection to this. And the amount of distance he went is insane. Like, he had to live on berries. He ran out of water. He couldn't find fresh water. He almost got found out multiple times.
Damn.
You know, when he was near his plane, he had to, like, hide in bushes and mud. And they knew he was in the area, so they would just open fire randomly and, like, machine gun, like, an entire hillside or a forest just in hopes of, like, flushing him out. Like, they knew he was there. Like, they were following him. And that is such an amazing story. Mm-hmm. And I wish, by God, that was told on screen instead.
Hey, it's not too late.
And that leads into what I mentioned earlier. He sued, like, I can't remember if it was the movie studio or the director himself, but he sued them because he felt the story was just completely misrepresented.
Yeah. Like, his main thing was like, oh, Owen Wilson's not like me. He swore. I never swear.
Okay. I'm sure one of his big points was how reckless he was. Like, it's an action movie. An action movie. It's like the director, you know, wherever he may be, took a hat, cut up a bunch of pieces of paper with like random conflicts in the last 100 years written out on them, bounced the hat around, and then he reached into it and said, the breakup of the Yugoslavia. That sounds pretty interesting. All right, cool. And I'll make a movie on that.
What's it about? Who?
Yeah.
All these, they're bad. They're like Russians.
Oh, what bad thing are they doing? Oh, they're committing atrocity? Cool, let's go on with that. It's like, okay. Neat.
So let's talk about the budget of the movie. The budget.
Okay.
So watching the movie, you can tell that they had access to an aircraft carrier, to jets, to actual military equipment to make this movie.
Yep.
Like
being on location.
Yeah.
Like
they spent, I think it was around $40 million, which is a nice chunk of change. So I think what helped was the whole presentation of the material. Get access to all that military stuff.
I'll give that to him. The director had a very, very edible plot.
Yeah.
A very safe, edible plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big critic of Hollywood in the fact that a lot of the movies they often make, the ones that get the most funding, are the ones that have very safe, popularly accepted plots.
Yep.
It's just the way they work. You're going to get funding if they know you're going to get results.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing gets results like a cheesy war movie about a guy flying a jet and having to like escape baddies.
So let me tell you something that you might know. For the CIA, they have something called the Entertainment Liaison. And with this liaison, they're like, okay, we'll give you access to, Humvees or tanks or, the USS Indianapolis. But you'll have to adhere to certain guidelines, and we have to look over your script and make sure you're not saying anything bad about the military. And I think as I was watching this movie, I had those thoughts. I was like, they have access to, at the time, state-of-the-art technology.
You were just thinking, the goddamn CIA has touched this all over. They just rub their dirty hands. I always go.
Like, it felt like a giant recruitment movie for the Navy.
I mean, that's what Top Gun is.
Yeah. Let's do it, Goose.
It's like, oh, put on, what was it called? Highway to the Danger Zone. Put on Highway to the Danger Zone, just blast that shit, and everyone will want to join the Navy.
The Danger Zone. Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's get those Serbians.
Let's ignore the fact that only 5% of Navy recruits ever actually get to fly.
Really?
Very few people get chosen to be, a jet pilot. Wow. It's super rare to be a pilot. You have to go through so many things, and you just might not get chosen.
Hey, even Owen Wilson wasn't chosen, our main character. He wasn't the pilot. He was the co-pilot. He was the guy in the back.
I mean, shoot, after he did something that basically would have gotten anybody court-martialed, I can see why.
Hey, let's go over there. Okay.
That was totally unbelievable to me that his pilot so lackadaisically went along with it. Hey, let's violate a direct order. why we're out.
Well, think about it. So in the beginning of the movie, Owen Wilson is like pretty much yearning for an actual conflict. Like, oh, let's go. Like, oh, this is so boring. The monotony of every day.
He's leaving. So that makes it more unbelievable, though, is that he's leaving. He's already put in his form to discharge.
Yeah.
And the admiral's accepted it. Gene Hackman accepted it. Like, oh, okay, well, whatever. I'm just going to hold on to this. And yeah, well, you'll be out of here before you know it. And, his pilot was going to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Why would his pilot so lackadaisically no, we shouldn't do that. Oh, all right. This guy's leaving. He has no stake in the game anymore.
Right. They saw something weird on their radar. They're like, oh, we're patrolling. Let's see what it is. And what they uncovered was a Serbian militia.
Yep.
Like, I think they're in the demilitarized zone. Like, they weren't supposed to be there. So they took pictures with their fancy digital camera,
which was pretty cool. Which, by the way, they didn't know that's what it was. They saw military equipment, a lot of movement, but they didn't know what they were doing down there. Right. Until, of course, he stumbles through the bodies and everything like that. He's like, oh. Yeah.
So after Owen Wilson is shot down by the Bosnian forces, he is on the run from one of the commanders of that militia because they can't afford to have an American be alive, because then the American forces are going to come and rescue him. Then they're going to discover what they're actually doing. And so they have to kill him. So they're hunting him down, and while he's evading their gunfire and their cars and all that stuff, he stumbles upon a mass grave. And in that grave are, it's not really spelled out in the movie, but any type of research will bring you to the conclusion that Bosnia was doing some ethnic cleansing of their people.
Yeah, those women, children, the old, and mm-hmm. men, of course, were in there too. But it, yeah.
Yeah.
The history is very, very gruesome. Like, I actually found a really cool documentary. It's on my watch list now.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it?
It has like three different names because it was produced by a film studio in Bosnia quite a few years after the whole conflict. And it got funding from a Central European Film Council. And I think like some other organizations like funded as well. But it's a documentary from a woman who was held captive by the militia.
Really?
And she has her entire story from the time the war, Yugoslavia, broke up all the way to the end of it. And through her eyes, you kind of get to see the conflict. It's really, really terrible. That's why I watch this, because it's like, it's won like numerous awards. And it's like, considered one of the most comprehensive like understandings, like, or oral histories wow. of that conflict.
That's amazing. Well, when you figure out the name, be sure to add that in.
I definitely will. But what did you think of the way they treated the atrocities, though? That's a big part of that conflict. Historically, right. I flinched and cringed at how it was handled, because it was just handled as like a few little flashbacks and him crawling through some bodies. And it's just like, oh, that's it. It's like, no. Like, the atrocities in that conflict were happening almost all throughout it. And for it to be downplayed in a couple scenes, it's just like, okay, you're just kind of using it as like a high and by.
So
look how bad this is.
I would say, given the time period it was filmed, so it was filmed around 1999, so they probably wrote it around 1998, which would have been 3 years after the Scott O'Grady conflict or incident, where he was shot down, and then it was discovered that the Bosnians were massacring a very specific people group, Muslims. They're trying to clear them all out of their land, and they ended up killing 64,000 of them.
Yeah, it was a massacre.
And they set up concentration camps, and estimates put it, the Muslim population in that area dropped by 100%. It's intense.
It's very intense. It's kind of surprising how much it was bungled mm-hmm. in terms of using it.
Yeah.
I'm not using it. That's a bad way to put it. But
portraying it,
given how fresh, because I get what you're saying, that, oh, well, it was really recent and that conflict tied up by the time this movie was getting produced.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. But I will contest that by saying that it was still fresh in America's mind how much we bungled our involvement or lack thereof in the Rwanda crisis.
Yeah.
Because Rwanda was already a few years past by the time this was put together. And that was kind of on a similar scale. We stepped right. away, and we were within sight, within essentially smelling distance mm-hmm. of a major international crisis of ethnic cleansing. Yeah. And either we sat back and decided to do nothing because of political risk and gamification.
Mm-hmm.
Or because we didn't want to get our noses bloody ourselves.
I think it was a little bit of both.
Definitely. Definitely.
And yeah. And what's shocking is no one really talks about the massacre that happened at Rwanda or even Bosnia.
Yep.
Like, we had, like, we all know about the atrocities that Germany did in World War II. And I'm not going to say, I mean, a life is a life. Like, one life is too much. But no one talks about this. No one talks about the Armenian genocide. Like, there's so many more horrific killings that happened in the name of governments that no one talks about.
And I do think this movie is good, possibly significant, mm-hmm. or culturally significant, for that reason, at the very least.
Yeah.
At a bare minimum, that's why it's culturally significant, is because it actually sheds a little bit of light on a conflict that, to my knowledge, given I'm not a film buff, but I've rarely heard of any war movies or dramas that focus on the break of Yugoslavia, the
right.
Bosnia incident,
mm-hmm.
Or Kosovo, or any of that. The whole era in Eastern Europe. You're listing atrocities that are really unknown. You're listing Rwanda and Bosnia and all that. I mean, you've got also the killing fields of Cambodia. You've got the Great Leap Forward of China.
Uh-huh.
You've got, there's a few others I can think of. You can think of the incursion of the Japanese into China during World War II. Mm-hmm. There's actually a movie that I thought of that was probably the saddest movie you'll ever watch. I know it's the saddest I've ever watched. Like, if you ever want to just sit home and use up like multiple boxes of tissue because of how absolutely heartbreaking the movie is, it's called Back to 1942. And okay. It's about a Chinese landowner who him and his family lose everything because the Japanese invade and all these refugees are going across the country stealing things in their wake as they try and like move away from the incurring Japanese forces.
Wow.
And meanwhile, the Chinese nationalists and Chinese Communist Party are at war with each other in their civil war as the Japanese are coming in. So country's ripping itself apart. And the story is a true story
mm-hmm.
told from the perspective of his adopted granddaughter of how he survived. I won't spoil it for you, but like it is a survival story.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought of that movie when I was watching those teeny little clips of Owen Wilson trying to survive. I was just like, back to 1942, man, I got to watch that again. Of just the entire movie, which is almost 3 hours long,
wow.
is this guy trying to survive as he makes his way as far away from Eastern China as he can towards the West, Western China, to get away from the civil war, to get away from the Japanese, to get okay. away from the crazed refugees that are all fleeing the conflict with him. Like it's intense and it's amazingly well produced.
That sounds amazing.
It's a great movie.
I would say that might be a future Syndicate episode.
I would absolutely love to talk about that movie. it's a tearjerker, I warn you.
The best movies are, in my opinion. So to cap out the plot of the movie. So Owen Wilson flies, gets shot down, uncovers.
He tries to fly.
Yeah, he tries to fly, gets shot down, pursued by Bosnian forces, uncovers a mystery that no one knew was a mystery, which is the massacre of innocents. And so the driving force for Owen Wilson, other than surviving, is getting back to his ejection seat. Because in the backdrop, the Serbian forces are trying to reverse engineer the remnants of the fighter jets.
Yep.
But a failsafe during the ejection sequence is the computers get fried. Like the whole system gets destroyed, so it's not taken apart and reverse engineered by enemy nations. So they're trying to figure out, because they knew that the camera of the plane was operational and it took photos of their military. So they're trying to get the photos and they're having trouble finding it. They're like, it was stored digitally. Where on earth could it be? And hard cut to the ejection seat that's in the middle of a frozen lake. So not only does Owen Wilson need to go over there to radio back home, but he also needs to get those digital photos back to base. So then they know what's actually going on in Bosnia.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a pretty good driving force.
I thought it was a decent plot point
uh-huh.
that definitely helped move things along. But now that you mentioned that, it makes me think that for whatever reason, the director was trying to tell a super, super condensed hero's journey story.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's essentially what he's doing. It's like, mm-hmm. let me tell a hero's journey, while at the same time, I'm going to talk about a war movie. While at the same time, I'm going to talk about conflict no one wants to talk about. While at the same time, I'm going to tell a redemption story. It's just like, bro, decide what you want to do.
Uh-huh.
Like, it comes back to this is just the movie's an odd child out, essentially. They couldn't quite decide what, if it wanted to go to med school, law school, or go work at the fast food joint. Like, can't do all three.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, there's, like, I noticed that with the character, too. Like, very in the beginning, he's like, oh, man. Like, kind of like Luke Skywalker. Yeah. Like, oh, I dream of going to war and fighting.
But then when he's on the phone with Gene Hackman towards the end, where he's talking about his buddy, he's like, I shouldn't have left him behind and this and this. And it's like, man, it's really feeling like a hero's journey. We got our, to your point, we got our Luke Skywalker moment of... And then got towards the end of the, you know, I understand now, I take accountability, and yep. I should have done this, and I'll do it right. You know, just mm-hmm. then towards the end, when he's finally picked up, he's all like, you know, stoic and like, this will make things better. This is what he died for, and da da da. It's like, he wouldn't have had to die in the first place if you were freaking responsible. And it doesn't matter you were covered intelligence, you still would have been court-martialed.
I mean, would he though? Would he really be court-martialed?
100%.
100%?
100%. There's no question about it. You disobey a direct order during a ultra-hot conflict that they've just managed to cool down with a treaty, which, by the way, involves multiple other nations. It's not like we were there alone. This wasn't Iraq and Afghanistan, where we're the force that's there holding things together, uh-huh. so we get the say of things. That's not what was happening. We were part of NATO. We were under their umbrella. By us having some rogue fighter go out there, disobey a direct order, he's essentially, whether he liked it or not, representing the entirety of NATO. He's he basically, like, again, I'm on the side of, like, the guy from NATO, mm-hmm. the admiral, that's trying to tell Gene Hackman off, like, this man's endangering an entire peace treaty, and now you're going to make it worse by sending a search and rescue party out behind enemy lines for one dude.
You're on his side, but he is the villain of the story.
He's not, though.
He's like, we can't get involved. Like, oh, it is.
He's just
a
bureaucrat. No. An American audience will see him that way. Just like, oh, he's just a senseless bureaucrat. He doesn't understand the value of life. It's like.
And then Gene Hackman's like, no, I have to get our boy back. I'm going rogue, guys.
No, there would have been. There
Who's with me? There 15 men are with him.
Right?
Let's do it.
Like. Now, there would have absolutely been a court martial or two. That way, if he would have gone back alive, they just, like the real story, the real O'Grady, uh-huh. they would have told him, hey, you're on your own. Make your way all the way to a neutral zone. Well, that's 300 miles away. Doesn't matter. And O'Grady didn't get shot down for disobeying orders. He got shot down because I read a little bit of it. They had surface to air missile batteries mm-hmm. installed and dormant. Like, they had them turned off, so only when they heard a jet, they would turn them back on, so that way radar couldn't pick them up until they, like, turned them on for, like, a short period. Yeah, it was very, very shaped, like...
Yeah, that's...
And they were in places that they weren't really supposed to be. So, where they were
fighting dirty?
Oh, yeah.
Who would have imagined?
Like, he got shot down in a place where he was told to fly. Like, his orders were to fly over there and to do reconnaissance. He didn't disobey orders. But sometimes, bad luck, shitty situation. But still, even so, they didn't send out an aircraft carrier and four birds and an entire platoon of Marines, and we're going to get him back and send the admiral with as well. Like, holy crap, this is unrealistic. I'm going to go with them. It's like, yeah, cool. Not only did we lose a plane, two pilots, but now you're going to lose an entire platoon of Marines and you're going to get an admiral killed. Neat.
Neat. Who's in charge now? The janitor?
Yeah, I'm sure this will really justify things.
Oh, it would be even cool. Like, if they did a movie where it's like, we're going to get him back, and this is like the first act, and like the admiral gets killed. And then like the whole like battle group is like, what do we do now? Like, holy shit.
It's a good thing there's a chain of command.
I'm in charge now. Fuck.
At that point, you might as well make a freaking Adam Sandler movie about how the janitor of the aircraft carrier gets to be the admiral for the day.
Goodwill Hunting. Oh. But war.
Oh, God. I mean, it is a war movie. He's at war with himself. Okay, so...
I'm sorry.
No, it's not the worst movie I've ever seen. It's, if I had to give it a rating, I know we're not reviewing movies. 4 out of 10. It's not terrible, but it really is not a great movie.
So now we're at the point of the show where we like to give one reason why. Why would you recommend someone to watch this movie?
Oh, that's a really tough one. I don't know if I'd actually recommend it. I'd have a hard time justifying it. I would say that it's an interesting movie to have on the background and perhaps watch as one of the few cinematic representations of one of the conflicts we were involved in, an important conflict in that part of the world that not a lot of people talk about, at least here in the United States. So that's probably the only reason I would really recommend it. And I mean, if you're a huge like Owen Wilson fan or a huge Gene Hackman fan, maybe as that as well. But even that really, really, they don't carry the movie. They don't. It could have been Ben Stiller playing who Owen Wilson was playing. It could have been Adam Sandler. It could have been Bruce Willis. It really could have been anybody. Like the role he played was not unique. It did not require any like immense amount of range or character. His character or his acting wasn't really given an opportunity to shine in any kind of way.
Right.
He was filling essentially a very specific archetype.
Yeah. And I have a very specific reason why I would recommend this movie, which goes in vain of yours, but going off of what you just said, I think the movie is kind of like the Twilight of war movies, where in the book Twilight, Bella Swan.
Oh, the actual series. I think it's the Twilight. You're being metaphorical. Like, this is the Twilight of war movies. Or, damn, Armand, getting metaphorical here, but go on.
No, it's not being that allegorical.
It's the zenith. It's the zenith of Owen Wilson war movies, but there's only one. Exactly.
So I hearkened it back to the Twilight books because Bella Swan, the way she's written, is very generic.
Shallow.
Like, there's not a whole lot of depth.
She's two-dimensional.
Which allows the reader to put themselves into that character.
And this goes back to it being basically a big recruitment movie.
Yeah.
Because you could be Owen Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, that's me. And that's what I would do if I was in this perilous situation. So I think Owen Wilson's character and his portrayal of Chris Burnett allows the viewer to put themselves in the situation. And I think the movie in of itself is not really character driven, but it's more event driven. Like, you have all these set pieces and you go this way and that way, and you're like, Owen Wilson doesn't drive the movie. The events drive the movie and he's along for the ride.
And that's one of my big like pet peeves of media. I often equate bad media and badly created media to ones that follow that formula where the characters are pulled along by the universe. They're shaping it around them by them being there.
Yeah.
Instead of them having this massive world that they just happen to be stepping into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the reason Star Wars is so engaging, rather the ones that are really good, is because you feel like the characters are treading within a very expansive world.
Right.
It just seems like it doesn't end. And no matter what they do, the world moves on without them. The universe keeps going. The sun keeps revolving. Or rather, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Where meanwhile, some of the more less favorable Star Wars, I won't name which ones, they're not like that. They're written in a way where the characters are larger than life and they're shaping the galaxy around them and everything depends on them and it's so important. And it's like, this falls flat. This falls flat because you give me no reason to have care for the character.
Right.
Give me no reason to be interested in the universe. You're essentially making it all about this person.
Right.
And that to me is the indication of a bad piece of media, is when I can tell almost instantaneously that, oh, this character is the most important thing since sliced bread. And whatever they do, it's going to shape everything around them. No thanks. It's lazy. It's lazy.
It is.
And it's following a formulaic process, and formulaic story writing mm-hmm. is proven to be like a dud.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if people just like don't have good imaginations anymore, but they just like, oh, this person is good at everything and they're perfect. And they could defeat an empire themselves.
Regular Katniss Everdeen.
Yeah. So, like, the main reason I would recommend Behind Enemy Lines is it's a good conversation starter.
Okay.
On a very forgotten piece of recent history.
Okay.
And a very important thing that we should shed a light on, which is the massacre of a people group, a very bloody war, the toll of what armed conflict can do to a nation and a people group. So I think, yeah, it's a good conversation starter. It's a good like starting point. And then you open up the book and you see exactly what it is.
I feel like much like there's a abridged version of The Hobbit that condenses the three movies into one. I feel like this is a movie that could have used an abridged version as well. There's just a lot of things in there that really serve no purpose. And I'm trying to shape in my mind a good survival movie that focuses on this period of conflict. You know what is a really amazing survival movie that I thought of as well while watching this that focuses on a conflict that's not talked about enough?
What?
Hotel Rwanda.
Well, you have Black Hawk Down.
Black Hawk Down's pretty good. Yeah.
That's about it.
Hotel Rwanda, Black Hawk Down, Back to 1942. Mm-hmm. There's another movie I'm trying to think of. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, where they're like stuck out in the jungle and they're trying to like, they're damnedest to survive.
Tropic Thunder.
I was actually talking about that recently with someone about the whole amazing line Robert Downey Jr. says of "I'm a dude pretend to be a dude who looks like another dude." Hey, that's timeless. That's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
It's the only movie you'll get Tom Cruise playing a fat ball Tom Cruise,
and Robert Downey Jr. in blackface.
Exactly. He was on Joe Rogan podcast recently, and Joe mm-hmm. Rogan asked him if in this day and age could you do what you did in Tropic Thunder. And he's just like, why not? Like, it's not like. He's like, I'm purposely playing somebody that is mocking the kind of people that see this as acceptable.
Mm.
That was what the whole was. It was the joke that Robert Downey Jr. was playing an actor who was acting like he could play a better black person than a black person, which has happened before. You have that happens before. You've had movies where you've had Asian Americans playing actual mainland Chinese people, even though these Asian Americans have never been to China, acting as though they're Chinese in a Chinese movie about Chinese history. That's happened. And it's just like, I don't think, like, you don't know what to think of it. If the movie's good, you're like, oh, that's really interesting. But if it's not, and they feel very unnatural in the roles they're in, then it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Behind Enemy Lines got real Serbs, though. Okay.
Actually, they did not.
Oh,
because
speaking of which,
yeah, because so they filmed in Slovakia and they felt, given the premise of the movie of like vilifying Serbians and Bosnians.
Oh, yeah, get some real Serbs in there. What are you going to play? Well, you're going to play your uncle, essentially.
Remember when you killed all those people? You're going to play him. No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, it's like I already did enough of that. Never mind. Yeah. I mean, I was farming.
So they politely opted out of that movie. So
no, it's like they didn't get real Germans to play the concentration camp guards and Saving Private Ryan.
I think those are real Germans.
I could probably see, or Band of Brothers. I'm thinking not Saving
Private Ryan. Oh, right.
Yeah, because they didn't go to concentration camp in Saving Private Ryan.
No, they did not.
In Band of Brothers, they did.
Yeah. Thank you, Josh, for coming on.
It was a pleasure. I'm always interested in trying out new things, new movies, new games. Especially if I know they're not going to be that good.
Like, exactly.
Or they have some sort of significance to them. And I think there is some significance to this movie. It certainly has opened my interest of finding more media that focuses on that conflict, but mm-hmm. I'm a huge history buff, so that might also be why.
Yeah, I mean, for those that want to learn more about the breakup of Yugoslavia, there's a lot of good documentaries, one of them that Josh mentioned, but if you want a very high overview of the conflict,
you want to get behind the lines.
Yeah, get behind enemy lines. But that's it for this time on Syndicate. We hope you enjoyed yourself. We've been talking about Behind Enemy Lines by John Moore. Please check it out where it is available. And if you'd like to keep the conversation going, please add us at Syndicate on your favorite social media platform. That's Syndicate, C-I-N-E-D-I-C-A-T-E. And if you have any questions about the program or even media that we recommend, please reach out at info@syndicate.com or visit the website, syndicate.com. Until next time, stop that scroll and spend more time watching. See ya.